The Sportsman's Nation is a 2% for conservation certified business. And on August 21st, you can join other conservationists all over the world in supporting Community Conservation Day. It's a day for anyone to give their time and or dollars back to their local ecosystems and favorite conservation causes. For more information on how you can participate, visit fishandwildlife.org.
Heading deep into the backcountry requires a select list of purposeful items. Items that serve a profound reason for being there. When ounces add up to pounds, fluff and fillers are a no-go. Wild Spice Company brought the same mentality to their backcountry seasoning. A small selected list of the finest ingredients go into a sealed pouch that can be tossed in the pack. The Tellicherry peppercorns really add a delightful punch to a trophy cut of meat or even a dry-freezed meal in the pouch. Visit wildspice.com or find the link in the show notes. Choose from any one of their great blends and use the code HUNTIVORE at checkout to save 15% on your order. Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Nation, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
This is episode 71, Spring Turkey Talk with Jared and James of Boga Hunting. Nick is joined by fellow native Michiganders, Jared and James of Boga Hunting Podcast. These two are longtime hunting partners that enjoy the company as much as the pursuit. Together, they have some amazing stories about public land turkey hunting, spring bear hunting out east, and of course, whitetails here in the Midwest. We touch on our archery setups, enjoying the sport of archery, and what it means to be arrow rich. Of course, we end up in the kitchen where the Boga guys shine with some great ideas for your spring turkey. All this on the next episode of Huntivore.
Well, hey, folks. Beautiful evening here in Michigan. Old Man Winter decided to give us an uppercut and give us some snow here in April. Just a dusting. But as I'm looking outside today, it is getting real sunny again and getting warm. And it's probably making those turkeys really want to move around. And I'm joined tonight with probably a couple gentlemen that have been hot on the trail. In fact, actually, one of them is off the trail now. He is one and done tonight. I am sitting here with James and Jared of the Boga Hunting Podcast. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking this beautiful evening to join me for a chat.
You know, it's good to be here. And Jared, I want to see what you think, but that was a great introduction, Nick. I mean, yeah. Like you, Old Man Winter. I mean, uppercut. Like that was poetry, right there.
Well, thank you. I don't know how many people that I actually talk to face to face when they're like, "Man, Nick, just get to the point. Quit fluffing it up." But that's what I do. Is I fluff up
content. I love it. No, it was a nice, deep, rich voice too, almost like, ladies and gentlemen. Oh,
like you were made for it, man. Yeah, you're nailed.
Hey,
it.
You're hired to do our intro if you want.
That's right. Beautiful. We always forget. I feel like we always argue about who has to do it.
Yeah, I never
it's
do
your
it.
Turn. No.
Well, I tell you, hey, if you need a hype man, I'm ready to go. I charge by Excellent. The episode, though.
That's fine.
Yeah, everyone does.
So getting on this, there's a congratulations that goes out to you, Jared. You smacked a gobbler this past week. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was... That was a sweet hunt. Very, very interesting hunt. You want me to get into the story right now?
I want you to break right into it.
All right, let's do this. Yeah, so James and I drew our tag for the first season here in Michigan. And we primarily hunt up in like McCosta County area, public land. We don't know enough people to go on private. So we go to public land.
Not enough friends.
Yeah, not enough friends. No one really likes us anyway, but yeah. we don't hate it. We like going out on adventures, new places, trying new things. So we once again did that. We've been hunting this area for probably about 4 years now. So we're pretty familiar with it. And one of the spots that I really like to go to is kind of a ridge overlooking a swamp. There's private land butting up against that with the field in there. So it just holds turkeys every year, and we're able to just, you know, we can put them to bed on the roost that night. We know exactly where they are. I've got a tree that I'll go to that's almost foolproof. I've shot two turkeys out of there, missed one. It's bulletproof. So we camped out there. I went to that tree on the first morning, and probably within 40 minutes of me being there, there was a tom, I don't know, 25 yards off behind me, just barking at me.
Was the old tom, right? That was the old one.
Yeah, I'm guessing he was a dominant 3-year-old, just the way he was acting. Because I had done a fly down cackle, and I'm guessing he had quick scurried over to check to see if he could round that hen back up with his other hens, because he ran in, checked the decoys, and then just ran right off. But he wasn't spooked at all. So he was actually henned up probably 60 yards behind me after a little while. So I'm kind of like creeping around behind the tree. I'm getting ready for a shot. Maybe I can, you know, maybe I can pull off that miracle 50-yard bow kill on a turkey. But lo and behold, off to my side, a group of Jakes come in and cut my, probably within 5 yards, and kind of just circle around my tree and then start messing around with my decoys for a little bit. So I'm pinned, can't move, can't do anything. And they kind of get a little bit spooked because I was at that point moving a little bit. And so they're letting out some putts, just kind of getting a little jittery. So they kind of just took off a little bit more. So I was like, crap, that was my only opportunity this morning. So I kind of sat back down, kind of rethought my plan. I let off another call, like a couple yelps, and lo and behold, another turkey answered in a different direction. So I was like, all right, sweet. I've got my camera ready to go. I'm going to hit record. And I look at the camera and the batteries are completely dead. Even though they were charged up the day before, somehow the cold just zaps them. So if you ever try recording your hunts, make sure you've got backup batteries and they're staying warm.
I tell you, I can only handle one thing at a time. I'm a one task specialist. Like when you throw in videoing and trying to hunt, like I feel like I'm still having a hard enough time hunting, but now to take on that challenge of being able to video, it takes a special kind of mind to be able to do that.
It is. You gotta multitask. And this was my first time actually trying to film a hunt. So I'm sitting here, you know, fidgeting around, locking it in place, trying to zoom in and whatnot. A good thing the batteries died, because I wouldn't have time to.
Then you wouldn't have to worry about it now.
I'm like, all right, sweet. Now I can just hunt. So this tom pretty much just gobbled his way right up to the decoys. There's two trees kind of right in front of me. So he stepped right behind them. I was able to draw back, and I shot him at probably 17 yards or something, somewhere around there. And he died shortly thereafter and went and got him. Got back to the tree, and I hear another gobble, right? So I'm like, this is crazy. So I pick up my phone. I call James. I'm like, hey, dude, where are you at? He's like, oh, I'm sitting over here, but I don't hear anything. What's going on with you? I'm like, I just shot one, but I've got another gobble, so you need to get your butt over here real quick. And he's probably like 2 miles away. So he gets this stuff together, and he runs, what, a mile, did you say?
I ran a mile to my car, because we're basically on opposite ends of this two roads that kind of intersect the power lines that kind of go through. And so we found some great hunting spots there. He goes to one spot that, you know, it's historically been amazing. In my other spot, it was kind of by a gas line, which was great. But he calls me, he's like, hey man, you need to get over here. I'm like, why? Did you shoot something? He's like, yeah, go. So I took half my stuff. I left half of it there, and I ran the mile up to the car, drove. And of course, this is when the only time I saw other hunters. I don't know if I told you this, Jared. They stopped me, and they're trying to talk to me about where they're seeing birds. And I'm like, yeah.
That's why it took so long.
That's why, man. They took forever. So I run to the car, park, and I run. He texts me. He's like, three pulls in. One ditch, you know, and then follow the ditch. And so I'm like running down the power lines, kind of 1, 2, 3, run up. And you can take it from here, Jared. You called him in.
Yeah, so Jimmy finally kind of catches up with me. I was like, man, just come over here, take a seat, grab your, you know, catch your breath a little bit, because he was huffing and puffing. He had ran a little good long ways. These power lines are on hills. It was a good little trek. Like you were walking up. Yeah. And finally got him sat down. I'm like, you ready? He's like, yeah, just give me a second, man. So he's sitting there. I let off a call, and lo and behold, this Tom answers again. So after probably a couple minutes, we got him within what, 45, 50 40, yards?
Yeah. Man.
Oh my
God. 40 yards.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm guessing that was the same Tom that I had seen earlier in the morning.
Again, it was.
Just by the way he was acting. So he was just, I don't know if he was just a little skittish or if he was just in his spot and he didn't want to move, but. Yeah,
I have a thought about that. We're talking turkey hunting. That Tom, in my opinion, probably has been chased off by those Jakes. And I think that Tom would not come all the way in because he's like, there's Jakes over on in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, actually, and I feel like he saw our Jake decoy because we had a Jake and a hen up. And I feel like he walked up, saw one of those Jake decoys. And once he did, that was when he hit the brakes. That was my thought.
Those Jakes did come in.
Yeah.
While you were there.
Yeah. They chased him off. I forgot about that.
They did chase him off. Yes. That's why we couldn't get a shot. Because he was coming. He was coming. But then those Jakes came back and just kind of came closer than what he was. So then he pushed back. And
they followed him back in. I feel like they just harassed him. Mm-hmm. You know?
Or being an old smart bird, he has seen those Jakes walk up to hens and get smacked. That's true.
Because you better believe I was telling Jared, I'm like, dude, I'm gonna shoot a Jake if one steps out. Because Jared's this excellent caller. He's this champion caller, you might even say, although not this year. And so he's got these high standards. And I'm like, hey man, I got this recurve here. I didn't even have time to grab like my leafy camo, so I just got my gray hoodie on, and I'm like, I'm going to shoot whatever I get a shot at. So not so picky.
And that old Tom probably saw you running down the pipeline. He's like, heck yeah, I'm not going over there.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. So that was the beginning. Those birds, it took, I mean, we worked them for a while. Jared did. The beautiful thing is, like I said, Jared's a great caller. I need him to tag out early every year and just follow me around, you know? So we did that. It took a while. They finally left. We regrouped and went right back at it again. And I feel like we got into bird after bird. That in those 2 days, I think we had how many total, Jared, like shot encounters? Probably six, seven.
Yeah, six or seven.
Yeah, and the every time we were just foiled by the, like a lot of when you're running gun, you don't have any blinds, or you don't have decoys, you're just running out there, you're calling them in. And so like that last little distance to get him in trad bow range, it was just always a little close, you know, just right there. I almost came back to draw on those other Jakes we called in, but never could quite get him to close that final, you know, couple of yards. So
gotcha. So not only just being able to go out turkey hunting, but you guys have even taken it a step further to say, like, we are going to be as minimalistic as possible. There's not only you're running like video equipment so that you can show what's going on in your hunts, but there's no blinds. This is all public land. Like, you're taking on that full challenge at this point. And that's probably by design at this point. You guys don't want to. It's not about tagging out early every year all the time, but it's about the challenge. Am I right?
Oh,
is that what you guys are talking about?
100%. I was telling Jared, I was like, this was a day and a half, 2 days of hunting. Were probably some of the best times I've ever had hunting. We were just cruising and getting into them. And it's like, yeah, it's public land, but there's like hardly anybody else out there. We walked 10 miles both days. And we're just kind of exploring and going, you know, going all over the place. So it is by design. It's fun to not have a blind and fun to, you know, work these birds in and figure out where they go in the middle of the day. That's, you know, something we learned a lot mm-hmm. about this year. I feel like we've, every year you go out, you learn something new. And I feel like one of the big ones this year was just middle of the day, where are the birds hanging out? And we started to find them. And once we did, we just followed that same strategy and kept getting into them.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, just putting more pieces of that puzzle together. And yeah, in the, you know, the little black book of your mind, you're like, all right, this mm-hmm. is where they're going to be. And this is like, this is a piece of ground too. You were talking about, this is year four that you've been on that. So you've had a lot of pieces you've been able to put together. So, well, good on you guys. And I even love the different approach that you guys go with. We have Jared with the modern compound, and we have James here already talking about Tradbo. Give us the rundown. What are you still shooting that same recurve that I was talking to you last deer season there, James?
I am. Well, you know what? I think I'm, is it bi when you shoot two bows? I'm looking at getting a compound bow. So I will be, you know, dabbling back into, because that's where I originally came from. But yeah, I'm shooting the same recurve, plan to always be trad bow hunting. It's a lot of fun. Like, I feel like some of the most fun you have is just going in the backyard, shooting at stumps. Like, I can do that all day. It's a blast.
Well, good deal. Good deal. What's your arrow set? Well, what's the poundage of the bow? You're running like a 35 pound.
35 pound. What do I, what? I'm like
25, please.
Come on, guys. No, I'm running it's at 50 pounds ish, or 40, 49, something like that. 48, 49. And I'm running like a heavy arrow. I don't have any right now, 'cause I'm all packed up. These, Vector custom arrows, that cool company. You give them the specs of your bow, and they build these arrows out with their, you know, computer program, and they've been shooting great. Have had them for 2 years, so nice and heavy arrow, fixed blade, obviously broadhead. I'm in the market right now. I'm looking at new broadheads for the year. I don't have one that I've picked yet. I've been actually looking at the for the compound for sure, doing those mega meets, Jared. But for the trad bow, I'm not sure yet. So,
gotcha. Yeah, something big tool steel up the front. I've been using the cutthroats, and actually those have been going back and forth between my compound and my longbow. And yeah, I really like the way those things fly. And when you throw them into a field stone, they do bounce back quite well. You can put the blade back at them.
Are those the RMS? Is that what those cutthroat?
Yes.
Yeah, those are sweet looking. I was looking at those too. Those look sweet.
And so now we got Jared on the modern compound shooting. Do you switch up your arrows, Jared? Do you have a different turkey arrow than you do, say, a deer arrow? Or are you one arrow across the board, just putting something different on the front of it?
His turkey arrow is a shotgun.
Oh, that's why.
The bow's a Remington 870. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You should see the cartridge
draw. Yeah, that's right.
No, I like less is more is my philosophy. So if I don't have to have a different setup for every different thing that I do, then I'm all on board that. I use the same arrow to shoot in the backyard as I hunt deer, as I hunt turkeys. Like, if it shoots straight and I'm accurate with it, it's good enough for me. Like, I'm not too big on.
Oh, he's not too big.
The suspense is killing me.
He just jumped. He gone.
I was going to ask him, if what arrow he uses when we played trad golf. We have this field where we hunt, this huge, huge field, and we try to land the arrows next to like things. Like different markers in the field. You shoot them straight up, they pop straight up like this, you know. So I think he uses the same arrows for that too. But yeah, he does. He uses the one arrow. I did the same thing. Otherwise, it's just a lot of messing around. Tune new arrows, figure out tips, figure out sights and everything else. So
gotcha. Yeah, I've been finding just along with different people, as I get a chance to talk to different archers or different guys who are bow hunters, some fall in this, just like you guys are saying, this set it and forget it mentality. And you use the same arrow, use the same head. I think it's a little bit like what's the name of the movie? Oh, Escanaba in the Moonlight, where Remnar does the same
don't
thing.
Don't mess with, yeah.
You don't mess with nothing.
No.
You know, a close buddy of mine, he's still running.
Things aren't just so, things won't work out. Whiskey chaser!
So, you know, keeping everything, you know, the set it and forget it sort of setup. And at the same time, now I find myself personally into this tinkerer mindset. Now, granted, I'm shooting one critter with my bow right now, and that's just venison. That's just deer. I haven't jumped into the turkey hunt yet. But, you know, I have my deer hunting arrow, and with as much effort and sentimental and actual money into those arrows, I'm like, man, I don't want to just sling these around the other three quarters part of the year. I don't want to break these arrows. There's a lot of money into this
setup. There is.
You know, granted, like the first year that I made them, like, yeah, that was the real hit to the pocketbook. But then like each year that I don't have to change that initial setup, you know, it just saves me from having to buy more broadheads. It saves me from having to buy new arrows. So actually this year I went and bought basically arrows that I will be able to fling around. So when I go to tack, I'm going to have zero sentimental attachment to any of these arrows.
That's great. They're out of the mire bin. You know,
yeah. Well, I did get them from Easton, but I went, well, because I want to use them for paper too. And I instead of going micro diameter and missing the 5 line or missing the 10 line, I want to start breaking that. So I went back to standard at least. So I got those Easton 6.5s. And yeah, they're not as beefy as say my hunting setup, but at the same time, like I'm just poking foam, I'm just poking paper with these things. So I find myself now having to like adjust the rest and then like put a marker, take a picture, and like save that data aside so I don't forget about it.
Yeah, I feel like the arrow is the currency of the archery world. You know, you're either arrow rich or you're arrow poor, and there's a caste system. You know, this is serious business, and some people, you know, look down on other people based on how many arrows they have. I've seen Jared look down at me many times for what I believe I can just say it, he's arrow rich. I think Jared, even after this weekend, you're still arrow rich, right?
I'm probably on the top 2%.
Wow. You're not above 1% of arrows.
No, I'm not there yet.
Well, we're the 99. We're coming for you.
We're coming for you. We want your inserts. We want your knocks.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna march in New York City and protest. Yeah, it's fun. It's funny though, like, because to be honest, I feel like the value of an arrow has at times affected my shooting. Like sometimes I'm convinced that the struggles I've had in the past with target panic have actually come from the fact that I'm always so like anxious about losing an arrow. Or my thing was I was always scared to sail it off the back. I must have done it once or something right off the back of the target, you know, it shoots up. And from then on, I just could not get my pin to set on. I really think it's fear of being arrow poor is what caused it. I'm totally serious. I feel like that was behind it.
No, I get you. I've already mentioned this tack a couple times, alluding to the Total Archery Challenge. And in Michigan, it's up in Boyne. It's on the Boyne Mountain Ski Hill.
Boyne Mountain, and
just an absolute riot. And the very first year, I think I went with 12 of, and those were my hunting arrows. Those were my everything arrows. And I think I walked back with one out of that dozen.
That hurts, man.
But at the same time, we show up and we get to the practice range and we're looking at each other like, where's the closer bags? Like all of our pins went to 40. And
where's the ladies' tea?
Where's the ladies' tea? We had no idea what we got ourselves into.
What course did you shoot?
We did that very first year. We started with the locals course and we felt like champions. We felt like, oh yeah, we got this. Then we went later in the afternoon, we went to the mountain ops course, and a lot of up and downs. We lost a few there. Then we did the next day. We went to, at that point, it was called the Yeti, which was.
Oh, yeah, it's still there.
Yep. I think they still have the Yeti course there. The first shot was over water at 75 yards. And we look at each other. We actually let a group go past because we couldn't figure out who was going to be the first one to lose an arrow. Because we were all like, we don't know what to do on this one.
Yeah. Aim high, play the win.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
We just raised up and sent it out. You know, we'd hoot and holler if we actually hit the hoof and you're like, 5 points, take it. That's what I get.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times where we gave ourselves 5 minutes to find the arrow. Cause it's like, we ain't gonna find this thing ever.
Yeah.
We did better each subsequent year. We've done better and better and better. And to the point now we're like this year, most of our crew has an adjustable sight, putting together air, actually practicing. That's the hardest part with a couple of my buddies right now is getting them to actually come and shoot outside of the event. They would like to just open the case, pull it out, dust it off, and go. And they end up paying pretty hardcore for that.
Yeah.
But the big story of this whole thing too is, so I think I lost four or five arrows last year. And I felt like I did really good at that. I'm like, hey, there's not many people that walk off that mountain only losing, you know, five or six arrows.
Sure.
And then, of course, you know, social media comes around, and here's Jared with his big old smile.
Unbelievable. I knew this was coming, man.
Didn't lose a single arrow. That's why he's arrow rich, because he doesn't lose the arrow.
You know what he does? I've never been to one. Every time there is one, somehow I'm camping. I must every year I'm out. But I feel like there's two explanations for this. Because I've shot with Jared. He's okay. He's a much better caller than he is a shot. I would say that's pretty accurate, Jared. So I'm either you're sneaking up and you're shooting or you're just shooting it from close and not saying anything about it. I mean, this is a good time as any, as good of a time as any for you to admit, like, whether you just are making that number up, Jared, or you're getting closer. I mean, this is a great time to do it.
The great thing about TAC is that you're usually grouped up with other people, which gives you an alibi and and witnesses. So I could probably call up Mark right now and he could testify saying that I did not lose an arrow. In fact, I even gave him grief about the arrows that he lost.
It was smug, Jared. That is one of my least favorite Jareds right there. Smug Jared just walking around with his quiver full of arrows. You hate to see it.
Yeah. But yeah, didn't lose one arrow. And we shot the Yeti course, and I felt so big.
It was because you switched to that slide, that Spot Hog rat. Did you have the Spot Hog for that?
I did. I had the 3-pin and it's adjustable. So I did the typical 20, 30, 40, but then I made my bottom pin a floater. So even though it was at 40, if I adjusted the dial, that would be my moving pin. So I was able to go out to 80, 90 yards, just use that bottom pin.
Those sliders that's the way to do it. I love the Spot Hog, but those slider sights, I feel like fixed pin is just not the same. It's way easier with just being able to dial it to the exact yardage, you know, take your time, take a good long shot.
Amen. Amen. I actually picked one up. I got a 3-pin slider myself. The whole venture with that though, is my mindset is my ethical for deer is at 40. So I can lock down the slider when we get into September, and I'm really using just the hunting arrows at this point. I'm not going to have to move that slider. We just locked that in. I already have the 3-pin set up on there.
Yep.
So I love the versatility that I got going with it. It was worth the money that I did spend on that. It was a bit of an arms race this year. I got a new bow, and along with the new bow comes the new stuff that goes on it. Still running the same drop away rest. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that wasn't broke. But I really wanted to get my multi-pin because I was switching sights, actually. My hunting arrows were tuned to my 5-pin fixed sight that I would take off and throw on a slider or one of the dropping up and down slides for when I would just go shoot these super.
You're a complicated man. You're a complicated man. You have arrows and sights. You have two
but
different
it's not,
bows.
I have one bow, but that's the thing is I'm poor enough that I have one bow. I don't have all these multiple bows, but I got to make it work for everything. And yeah, I have a machine shop and I have a redneck bone in all of my body. So like if I can modify something to work, you know, if there's no instructions, if I hand you my sight tape right now, you're going to be like, this is hieroglyphics. What the hell are you doing?
Are there pictures? There shouldn't be pictures on here. It's drawing stick men and stuff on there.
Exactly. So I do like to get it's just these past couple of years as I've gotten archery, not just being a way to hunt, but like I actually just I enjoy going and shooting. And the complication with the compound bow that lets you shoot forever, but at the same time to then switch it up. You know, I pull out the bear paw longbow and there's no sights, there's no nothing. It's just me and the magical flight of the arrow. And that's, I tell you, that just gets me fired up.
Yeah, I feel like I could spend. I've spent most of my life compound. Last 3 years, 3.5 years, with either a longbow or a recurve, and I feel like it's more fun to shoot a recurve for a longer time. Like I could shoot a compound bow for half an hour and I'm done, but I could take my recurve and just shoot and shoot and shoot and never get tired of like shooting at different things and seeing, you know, far shots and so on. Because, you know, you're not breaking arrows if you know, you're sending into the leaves or whatever, even if you hit a rock. I have these, I don't have one right here, but kind of these rubber tips, you know, those blunt tips you can, and I've hit so many rocks with one of them that the metal behind it wore through the rubber, you know, but the arrows don't break and it's, you know, it's just a lot of fun to do. So.
Well, good deal. Good deal. I am going to take like a hard transition. We've been talking a lot about archery. We've been talking a lot about slinging arrows and enjoying not only our pursuit of the outdoors, but just our pursuit of the means of take. And this is not to downplay anybody that's a good rifle shot or who's just an absolute whiz at being able to sling the front end of that shotgun around. I mean, that takes effort and practice. And I see these guys out at the Sportsman's Club that, you know, when they're shooting skeet, it's like they can't miss at all. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing how they've, it's an extension of themselves where you start to blur that line between gun and guy, where now his eye is just fixated on that barrel and it can just send out the shot right where it needs to be. And I think that's a really, it's a dynamic thing that we enjoy our means of take. Cause then when we transition to when we do take the animal, we're practiced. It's something that we're not having to be thinking about. We've taken the effort that it is to make this an ethical shot. You know, at that point, it's almost a done deal. When Jared has that turkey come in at 17, you know, it's not one of those things where he's like, oh, I hope this hits. You know, it's an absolute he's in, he's done. You know, I mm-hmm. hope he gets into that range. But once he's into that range, you know, that's that bubble of sureness that you have, that when you have that confidence, you can execute that shot. And I think that's a real thing that as hunters and sportsmen, that we really do become fluent in our equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, to me, it's just half the fun, like to go out and practice and just figure it's a discipline and getting into a discipline in one area of your life, has a great impact in the rest of your life. So I would agree. That's like some of my favorite, I mean, you spend more time in the year shooting your bow than you actually do shooting at an animal or even hunting a lot of the time. So, you better enjoy it if you're an archer. Otherwise, you know, there's just a lot of work for just a small amount of, you know, actual use. So.
Amen. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with James. We were just here with James here a second ago. James, why is wild game so important to you? Why do you take all the effort to go and shoot a recurve and to want to get back into compound and to put yourself in a situation of being arrow poor, all for the pursuit of wild game?
I would say, I don't know, there's a lot of reasons. Like you could say it's healthy meat. Some would say it's organic, though. I would argue that would depend on what the animal, the deer was eating.
Very arguable.
But, right, like if it's not, you know, if you go out in the middle of some state forest, you know, thousands of acres in, maybe it's organic. But if it's eating the soybeans, it's technically not. But I think for me, it's just so fun. It is so fun to hunt. Every time I'm out, I got just a big smile on my face. I love the fact that I get to put on camouflage and walk in the woods with my bow is just awesome. And so like for my wild game is the fact is you get to go do that. And then you come home with this meat that you feed somebody and you tell a story about, the whole thing is just, I mean, it couldn't be cooler. It's like I said, I go out with a smile on my face, whether or not I get one. If I get one, it's like, wow, I get to, you know, clean it in my garage. Butcher it up. I get to have friends over, feed, you know, all year I've been feeding bear to people who have never tried bear. And it is it's the best because you get to see them chase something new. You get to eat it yourself. It's a cool, cool thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And that was your first bear ever. Well, that was last year.
Yeah. First bear hunt. We went to, West Virginia with the guys from the Untamed, and they have two great teams of dogs that we ran after for a couple of days up and down the mountains, and you know treed a bunch at the very end. But you know, got shooting with my bow, and it was a cool experience. Yeah, and bear, by the way, is, I mean, talk about like multiple uses more than deer. I mean, I'm getting a cape. You know, I've got the skull cleaned. I've got 20 pounds of bear grease that I've been cooking all of my food with. And then you get the meat itself. So it's like, and I got a claw necklace made for my daughter. So it was like, I used pretty much every piece of that bear, which is really, really exciting. Actually, I had the heart saved and I left it on the tailgate of Josh's truck. Josh's truck.
No.
So Josh from the Untamed was giving me so much crap. He's like, why do you want the heart, man? You know, like, why do you want the heart? I'm like, I love to eat. The heart is a great cut. You know, my daughter loves it. You know, I'd be thrilled to eat and try like the heart of something new. And lo and behold, I left it right in that crevice on his tailgate. And I feel like he texted us way later. It's like, hey man, it's one of y'all left the heart, you know, back here. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just great experience. Bear hunting at like Appalachian stuff. And, you know, these guys that have been doing it for generations with these dogs that, I feel like Josh and Kirk like their dogs more than like 98% of the people that they meet. It was a cool experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. We're going to break into talk about bear here in just a minute, but I do want to jump over then to Jared now. Jared, why is it that you take all the effort to harvest your own protein? I mean, you know, D&W is just a little bit of ways away from you. Meyer, now, since COVID since that food shortage all has gone to the wayside, we now have meat on the shelves. Why do you pursue protein of the wild sense?
Yeah, kind of like what James was saying too. I mean, I could go on and on about clean eating, providing to the family, but to me, I love the tradition of hunting, but also just the chess match in this, just that pursuit of that animal. Like it is most of the time, it's a very smart animal. When I'm hunting deer, but especially whitetail bucks, that's a smart animal. They know a lot of what's going on, and you have to be on top of your game with almost everything that you're doing in order to harvest him, you know, so that if you are successful in harvesting an animal, it just makes that end product 10 times better. Like you enjoy that kill, or at least you enjoy the end product so much more than going to the store and just buying something off the shelf. Like you put in hours through the summer practicing, like we just talked about, and then you're putting hours out in the woods, you know, studying the land, and working up on your woodsmanship to finally outsmart that animal. And it's just more enjoyable, and you appreciate that protein a lot more.
You know what, Jared, when you said that brings a good point up. I feel like a person's answer to that question is like will really be a good indicator as to whether or not they're a good hunting partner. So if like your reasons why you want to do it match up with somebody else's, you end up getting along pretty well in the woods. So Jared and I hunt, we've hunted together since before we could drive. And I think that we kind of share that, like, I want to get out there. I want to learn the woods. I want to learn the animal. Like there's, I don't know. And the fact that that's matched up has meant that we've gotten to spend a lot more time together. Cause it's easier for me to go out with you than somebody who's got a totally different approach to why they hunt and what they're interested in when they're out there, whether that's like, you know, they're into hunting ranches or fenced areas or, you know, whatever the thing that they're into is. I feel like if those things mesh, you get a good hunting partner too.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. I love that you guys are talking about that too, that a lot of guys, a lot of times hunting becomes this solo event that I got to go out. I got to figure this out. I got to do this. I got to do this. Whereas I think you guys have brought a dynamic too, where it's like you talk about this idea that when I go hunting, I'm not only in pursuit of this animal, I'm not only in relationship with the environment, but I'm continuing to deepen my relationship with someone who I hunt with all the time. Like this is my right-hand man, or, you know, for ladies out there, this is my right-hand woman, that we're out here together to pursue this. And there's a shared achievement when,
yeah, you know,
even though Jared got that bird that morning, like James, you were so much a part of that story. Like it was like almost so close to being two birds down on an opening morning, you know.
Yeah.
What an epic story. Even in the, you had one into 40, like it was almost there.
Yeah.
Like that just enriches the whole experience compound. At that point.
I would have shot that with a compound bow. I just want to throw that out there.
we were
you would have thrown a 40 yard shot, yeah, out on a Tom.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was my first Tom. My first turkey that I shot was a 40 yard bomb on a turkey, again with Jared. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's the companionship. There's also like just this romantic thing about hunting, right? Like
I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
Well, we do hold a lot of when I say romantic, I mean like adventure, right? Anybody who's never hunted and but you want to get a good sense of what it's like, go read Teddy Roosevelt talking about his hunting trips, like what are the hunts of a ranchman or wild hunts of a ranchman. It's a book he's written. He tells these little short stories of just his pursuit of a mule deer or whatever. And he talks about the exploring things and seeing things and all the things he encounters. And it's just like, he hits it. I feel like he nails it because it's just like, it paints this picture of this amazing adventure that you get to go on. You get to see these beautiful sights. You get to be challenged. You get to be outside. You get all these things. And it creates this romantic, romantic like experience. It's really cool.
Excellent job clearing that up, James. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Just wanted to take a time out and say thank you to the listeners for tuning in. It really does mean a lot. I would also appreciate that if you haven't already left a rating or review, to go ahead and do that. It all helps folks find us and get on board using and enjoying their wild game more. Feel free to chat with us and ask questions either on Facebook, The Huntivore, or Instagram at Huntivore. Got a recipe you think is dynamite and want to share? Or have some show topic ideas? Email us at huntivore@gmail.com. For even more hunting and fishing podcasts by real, relatable sportsmen, head over to Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, which happens to be a 2% for conservation company, who give 1% of their earnings and 1% of their time helping out the wildlife and wild places we all love. Now, back to the show. Jared, absolute favorite critter to chase. I only want one. You don't even get to do two.
Can I say it depends on the season?
No, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Nope, one. Favorite one to chase.
It's got to be a whitetail, man. It's got to be whitetail. Born and bred into it. It's
like turkeys are fun, and we talked about this before we started the show, but man, there's just one animal I'm just thinking about most, like even when we're out turkey hunting, it's like, oh, there's a rub. Oh, look at this. Like, we could totally sit up here in the hall. It's like, I'm always snapping back to deer hunting, like even while we're turkey hunting. So it's gotta be deer hunting.
The whitetail. Nice.
Yep.
Jared, did the bear change what your favorite critter is to chase, or are you still a whitetail man?
I'm still a whitetail man. Were you asking me or asking Jim?
Sorry, I meant James. Did I say Jared?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, whoops. Yeah, I'm following that. That makes sense. So I'll say this. I have been bitten by the bear bug, and I want to do a lot of bear hunting. It was, like I said, just eating it. It's just, and seeing it and being in the woods or something like that is really cool. But at the same time, man, I mean, I've hunted deer for like 20 years now. So I'm pretty like, it's pretty hung up. What am I, 32? Yeah, 20 years. So yeah, like Jared said, we'll be out turkey hunting the whole time. I'm looking for buck beds and stuff. When I was bear hunting, I was looking for buck beds up in those mountain points, you know. And so a lot of times Jared's got it, like in the past, Jared's been like, Jimmer, hey, Jim, you know, we're turkey hunting. You know, so like, because the whole time I'm looking, I'm like, man, look at that tracker. We'll just be sitting there. We'll see deer walk by. I'm like, hey, man, look at all those deer, you know? So yeah, deer is still, I mean, bear is like a very cool animal to hunt, but it's probably always be whitetail.
Gotcha. Yeah. Being a Midwest, it's found its way home. That's where I got my start. And so I can totally agree with what you guys are saying, that it's one of those things that, even as we're driving down the highway going someplace, you know, if I'm in the passenger seat, like all I'm doing is scanning fields. All I'm doing is looking through the wood line to see, oh, there's a horizontal line, but there's a deer there.
But mm-hmm. I think you could take that question and get more specific, because like whitetail hunting to you and me maybe is very different than whitetail hunting to somebody out east or versus out west, because there's spot and stalk, there's stand hunting, there's private land, public land, there's drives, there's all these, you know, Jared talked about tradition, all these different traditions and ways of hunting based on where you are. And so, you know, we talk about it a lot, like our style of hunting, the thing that I'm most excited about, even no matter where we go, is like, here's a big piece of land that I've never been to before. Usually it's public land, because, you know, usually those are bigger tracts of land and there's some competition, you're figuring out people, and that would be like, that's my favorite. When I think of whitetail hunting, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you know, actually hunting on my own, figuring it out by myself or with Jared.
Gotcha. Sticking with James, favorite critter to eat. Now you're already pursuing the whitetail. Is the whitetail found its home, or is now, like you said, like chasing the bear and having a taste of that bear meat, is that also working its way up the list?
I actually think, man, it's close. So I really like whitetail. I really like goose, like a wild goose. I love some jerky with that, but I actually think probably bear might be my, I like bear so much because the fat is a wonderful thing to cook with. It has no flavor. You know, it's great in anything. The meat's great, especially ground up. Man, it's probably bear for me.
Gotcha. The whole trichinosis thing brought to life by, you know, the Steven Rinella being able, when he ate the undercooked on his trip, is that something you think about? Are you, when you're cooking burgers, you're like, well, as much as I want it to be pink in the middle, I'm probably going to go a little less pink.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's a, yeah, I it's definitely at the beginning, and you know, I don't like the steaks so much. Like their steaks are fine. I would think of it more for steaks. When it was ground, it's like I'll make like meatballs or something, and or burgers on the grill, and I just cook it through. But if you treat it like you're cooking chicken, you know, or pork, it's the same thing. Like, yeah, at first it's a little weird, but then you get used to it. It's like anything. The more you get used to it, the less weird it is.
Gotcha. Jared, you've got a culinary background, so this kind of, I think, has a little bit more weight to you. Favorite critter to eat, and you've got quite a number of things that you've eaten in the past as well.
Yeah. Honestly, it's an animal that I've never hunted before, but I was gifted some of the meat because they didn't want it. So I was like, yeah, I'll have some. And it's elk. Honestly, I can't say enough good things about elk meat. It's my wife comes from a non-hunting family, so they've always been very leery to eating anything that's got any kind of off flavors or something that doesn't taste exactly like corn finished beef, you know. And I introduced that to her and the family, and it's been a huge hit, and it's something she enjoys cooking with. I very much enjoy cooking with. It's completely versatile, and it's just got a good flavor to it, man. I love it. It's awesome. That's my number one. That's even above one. Deer, you know. Yeah,
going with the elk out west.
Yeah, man. I've never hunted them, but I want to, just mainly for that fact.
Gotcha. Yeah. Plans to head out, or is it all still kind of like one day?
It's kind of like the one day. We've almost pulled the trigger on an Idaho
twice. Elk trip. We almost pulled the trigger.
Yeah, it's been close, but something just always pops up that just kind of trumps it. Logistically, we can do it. I don't know if they still do, but one good thing about Idaho is they offer a veterans discount, and so since I'm a veteran, like, we can get a pretty good discount on an elk tag out there, so that helped a lot. But like I said, during planning, it's like, all right, we're gonna do this. Let's pull the trigger on, you know, I don't know, getting a plane ticket or whatever. And then something's like, oh, dude, we should go hunt bears with these guys down in West Virginia. Or let's go to Wisconsin. We got the hookup over there. We can go get on these deer. It's like, all right, cool, let's do that. So it's always there on the back burner simmering. And one of these days, I mean, we've got a ton of contacts from people out west now. It'd be very easy for us to get out there and do it. It's just time and logistics, man.
I tell you, as family men, I totally get the idea that, yeah,
yep,
there's things that are always there. And then, like with you, like opportunity, it's so much easier just to head to Wisconsin, or even just to jump, you know, not, you know, a quarter of the way across the country to West Virginia as a, mm-hmm. is to go way out to Idaho. And yeah, let's say you bring something down, now how are you going to get that sucker back? Like, that's, it's such exactly. a logistics thing that,
yep.
you know, the hunt is awesome, but now not only the real work of having to butcher the animal happens, but now you have to get that sucker either in a truck or on a plane or something.
Yeah.
My wife's gynecologist, you know, crazy. But anyway, he's a big mountain goat guy, and went out, actually had the hunt of a lifetime, got a mountain goat, got it on the plane, came back, and they lost his cooler, and it went all the way to New York. He was supposed to get off in Michigan, lost the cooler. They found it, called him, said, hey, you know, we're going to try and get it to you. Best we can do is like tonight. You know, it's got to go one other stop and then it can make it there. He got to the airport and had the cooler sitting there, and he moved it, and you could just hear the sloshing of all the melted in there. He's like, he goes, I wanted to throw up. He goes, I was so mad. I lost basically my whole mountain goat right there. The meat wise, you know, he had the hide. I think he had brought home a couple cuts frozen in his carry on. So I think he still had some of either the tenderloins or the backstrap, but to just be like, yeah, he just had to throw it out. He was just devastated by it.
Did he want to throw it because he lost it, or because of the smell?
I think probably both. I think as soon as he cracked that sucker, yeah, there was the sick feeling, and then he cracked that seal, and then everything probably expelled at that point.
The
man's got kind of a tough job at that same time. So
he's seen some things, man. Yeah, he's seen some things.
Oh no, I won't go there.
Well, being seasonality, and we've already talked about, you know, your guys' a turkey hunt, and it's going to keep going out there. Turkey offers, I think, an awesome, unique flavor profile that the bird itself is almost two critters in one. You've got the breast that's all white meat that is basically a powerhouse. At that point, it's all fast twitch muscle. That sucker needs to get in the air, or it needs to like slow itself down from coming out of a tree. So there's just this fast twitch muscle that's all in there. These big breast lobes that you want to cook like fast, or you know, pound it thin and then add some flavor to it. But at the same time, on the other end of that bird, it's like super dark meat. And a lot of that dark meat, it's almost like trapped flavor at that point, that you're going to get a lot of flavor out of those leg quarters if you keep those. But at the same time, there's a bit of like trying to understand what that animal has to do. So when you got your tom, Jared, were you most excited for the white meat? Or are you one that likes to play with a little bit more of the flavor? Yeah, it's going to have texture. It's going to be a little more chewy. Or do you like to go after the dark meat side of that tom?
So this year's tom, I wanted to utilize as much as I could. Because of last year, all I did, last year actually was my first turkey ever. And so I just took the breast. I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to deal with anything else. And then after kind of listening to a lot of different people hear about, you know, the great things that you can do with all these useful parts of the turkey to make these different dishes, I'm like, oh, I'm going to keep as much as I can. But then even after this year, I'm like, I didn't get the neck. I didn't grab the wings. I didn't grab, you know, this, that, and the other, but I grabbed the breast to utilize in the dishes that I've used in the past. And then this year I actually kept the legs because I'm going to be trying a low and slow method. There's a way that I cook a deer shoulder that is just, you know, just knock your socks off. And it's just like, I will never again grind up a deer shoulder with this cooking method. And I'm going to try something very similar to that with these legs, because the turkeys are on their legs. I mean, most of the time they're walking around, they may be running away. So I'm guessing that this type of meat is going to be a little bit more tougher. There's going to be some connective tissues that need to break down, which is only through low and slow heat cooking. And I've got some sweet ideas that I'm going to use for it. So I was actually excited to just have all of it, just have the options, and then I can go from there.
Good deal. Good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I get to the Thanksgiving table, you know, as much as like, yeah, there is the succulent white meat that's there, I turn instantly to dark meat at that point. I love the flavor that comes off the legs and the thighs, especially. There's less connective tissue in the thighs. But I mean, at the same time, you still have to cook it a little longer than you do the white meat, but it just has a good punch of flavor to that. And so I get into this idea of like flavor versus texture. I talk to some folks who they're like, oh, I love a steak that falls apart, that's fork tender, or like, you know, like what, where I want to take some of that, the white meat, and pound it out into schnitzel. Schnitzel's awesome. It's great. It has its place. And, you know, by no means am I wouldn't want a piece of that, but at the same time, like the fact that I then have to take a piece of dark meat and I have a little more chewiness, I have to chew it like three or four more times than I would a piece of white meat. But from that, like the flavor extraction that happens, it does a lot more to that. Now, granted, I'm coming a lot from the domestic side when it comes to turkeys, but trying to, like you said, when you have that opportunity, you know, I have had play because I get a lot of birds presented in front of me. You know, when you've here in Michigan, we only get one bird, you only get one tom per season. And it's one of those things like, man, I want to be able to use it. And I'm excited to get right after that. And so like you said with your first one, like, oh, I'm just going to take the breast lobes because that's what I want to use first. And then jumping into your second, you're like, all right, I think I want to take this to another level. I think I want to find a few more of the usable cuts in there. So good. I'm excited that you, you're going to dive into the dark meat side of things.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way as you. When there's a bird on the table, you guys can have the breast, like give me the legs. I'm all dark meat. So like this year I'm pumped to make something with these turkey legs. Like it's going to be a fun experience. And I'm hoping that, we can make it work. Jimmy, did you? Oh yeah, you didn't get a turkey. Sorry. No, that's not a dig. That's not a dig. That's not a dig. That's not a dig. I thought you had got like when you had gotten your turkey.
Yeah.
Back in the day, what did you keep from that? I don't even remember.
The last time I shot a turkey, I did the legs and the breasts. I tried just like a regular like baking the breast just to see, and it was fine. I'm not a big white meat guy. Like I just. It's fine. You know, if I'm eating white meat, I'd rather have it like a, you know, like fajitas or something. And that's what I ended up doing with it. Cut it thin, made fajitas out of it, grilled it. But those I grilled one of the turkey legs. Actually, we grilled it out in the woods with ramps that we found and stuff, which was great. And the other one I slow cooked. I'm slow cooking stuff with a bunch of connective tissue. I love that, like almost like sticky, chewy. Like what you get with any roast or anything like that, just all that stuff breaking down. So that's the way that I did that last one. My hope was this year I wanted to make sausage. I forgot where I heard this. They're like, try making sausage a year. That way you can at least like enjoy your turkey for more than like a meal and a half. Like it will last you for a while because you'll eat just a sausage or two. So that was my hope for this year, but didn't get it done.
Yeah, the effort and the weight. Or the bounty that you take from a turkey, it's tough because you got one. So I like that idea you're saying of like trying to make the bird last more than just one or two meals or at least a week at that point. You know, you cook a breast lobe and well, shoot, I got to eat that sucker because I don't want it to go bad. I don't want to waste this thing. So now it's turkey sandwich. You know, you have a Sunday meal, but now at the same time, well, it's turkey sandwiches for the rest of the week. Don't get me wrong. I'll eat a turkey sandwich every day of the week. And I have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like to be able to, like you said, break that sucker down into, you know what? I don't have to have this all in one sitting or all in one week, but put some of those sausages away and to be able to have those on a special occasion. So I like that mentality. Thanks, James.
I haven't tried it yet, so it could suck. But that was my idea. It was a thought that I heard from somewhere else. So I'll take all the credit for that idea for sure.
Well, good deal. Back to Jared. The heart, liver, gizzard, the insides. Didn't mess with it this year? Tried it out this year?
No, not this year. Usually nope. I'll try everything once. I've never tried a turkey heart. I do like chicken gizzards. But it was just... I don't know if we were just in the mindset like, hey, we got to clean this thing up and get back out there. And I just missed a whole bunch, but it was just, I think it just happened so quick that right now thinking about it, it's like, yeah, I missed a ton of opportunity that I could have kept on this bird, but
yeah. Well, at the same time, again, it comes back to it. You got one heart that you can't share it with anybody. It's going to be literally a treat for you. And you know, I like the idea of turkey hearts here that I can put them on a skewer. I can have like five or six that I can throw on a skewer and, you know, hit them with a glaze, throw them on high heat. And I'm able to enjoy that. But at the same time, if I want five or six wild turkey hearts, I either got to have five or six friends who shot a turkey and don't want the heart, or I got to save these in my freezer for 5 years.
Or you got to be real sneaky and don't let the DNR catch what you're doing out there. grab the 22, go to work, don't let anybody see.
Send all the hate mail to huntivore@gmail.com. We'll be sure to forward that on to James.
I want to throw it out there. The Boga Hunting official stance is anti-poaching.
Okay, good.
Yep.
So we're an anti-poaching podcast.
So, well, good. Well, yeah, I wish I wish you would have taken them to try them out, Jared, but at the same time,
Dude, you've already taken that.
You're already taking the effort on the dark meat. So that's already something new that you're going on. And I think that's anything that we can ask of hunters, that it's not, I mean, you can always easily go that, oh, you could have used this one more thing, or come on, James, why don't you keep the wing feathers of your turkey that you're going to get and then make
for quills for writing letters.
Or you could, yeah, you could go that far too and do the quills and letters. I was thinking make fletchings. That's better for your arrows. You're going to get arrow rich just by making them yourself. That's
true. Very good point.
Or send them over to Vector. They can then, they'll punch
it out
for
you. That's right. They'll figure it out for me.
Hey, Isaac, fix this.
Yeah, that's right. I need arrows. Here's some feathers.
So no, I am very, what do I want to say? I'm very excited that you guys are taking that extra step in not only pursuing the animal, like at that same, it's the chess match that drives you, but at the same time that chess match doesn't end, that you're still continuing. They're still learning on new pieces of that animal that you get, you know, Jared learning about the shoulder from a deer and then being able to be like, you know what? I bet you I could translate this into a drumstick on a turkey. Like that's real chess match going on right there. So hats off to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going to be, I'll definitely be sharing it on social. So,
and I worked on the bear.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it's a pretty foolproof plan, man. If it's anything can go in there and it works, it's just good. It's a good recipe. And I'm excited for it. That's all I can say. I'm ready.
Well, good deal.
Got to do it now. They're in the freezer, so.
Well, hey, we have got to the crescendo of our episode here. We're at the two-dish breakdown. Okay. This is where I give you guys a scenario, and you got to break down what exactly you're going to do with this scenario. How are you going to cook it up? What are you going to use? Do you have a marinade or a brine that you're going to bring to the table, and if you're willing to share that at that point. So we're all about sharing ideas here at Huntivore. So I'm going to throw this one out to, we'll start with James on this one. We're going to go with a wild turkey dish. Maybe talk about those sausages. Do you have a game plan for the sausage, or do you want to just jump into something different on a wild turkey dish?
Oh man. So you know what? Now I'm going to say something different now. Because of a Christmas present that I got this year, I got like one of those meat slicers, you know, so I can get like nice. And I'm making like a cold cut. I'm like smoking that turkey. And I'm going to thinly slice it. I make my own aioli. So I'm going to make some like nice thick aioli to go on there. I pickle onions a lot too. So throw some pickled onions on there. I don't eat bread. Cause you know, that, gluten and stuff, you know, it's bad for you and it gives me the poops. But I'm throwing it on lettuce and, with some pickled onions and some aioli. And I feel like that'd be pretty good smoke, obviously smoked if I didn't say.
Nice. What wood are you using?
So I've messed around with a lot. I like a hickory or like a, you know, I just feel like that one's, it's pretty good all around. That's usually what I pick. Is that right? I mean, Nick, you know more about cooking. Am I doing the right thing by picking hickory? Is that correct?
Oh, I did. I was giving you some praise over here as we were. I didn't know if you'd see it on the Zoom meeting here.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, I really love the flavor of it. It really has like it's a mild nuttiness that, I mean, if you end up using a specific wood long enough, you start to pick out things from it. And I think just because it was the first bag that I kept grabbing, like hickory, I could really get some awesome flavor out of both, even on the venison side, but then even on turkey, if I'm using that on the PK, I really like a hickory chip on those. Apple and pecan and peach wood, you know, the fruit woods, I'm still playing with a little bit more.
Yeah.
I really do like those, but at the same time, I mean, they work with just about everything. If you go with an apple or if you go with a peach, like you can't go wrong. I'm currently playing with mulberry. I took a mulberry tree down in my backyard, and so I've bucked that up, and I took the branches and actually then made those into small sections and I will actually take a piece of, I don't have the chips off them. I need to rent a chipper and then run some of those through there to get the chips off it. But I'm using mulberry hunk, and that's my next wood that I'm working on as far as like what that's going to be really playing with. But as far as
hickory, can you make that into pellets for me though? Can you make that into those little pellets? Cause I want to try that. They don't really sell mulberry, you know, pellets.
They don't sell it anywhere. It's one of those things. I'll work on a pellet idea. You might have to, you might have to jump over to the chip side. I can definitely make you the chips, or I can get you the hump.
Good.
I might have to chew up a bunch of the mulberry and then like spread it out, let it dehydrate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like squeezing it. We'll see if I can make that work. That might take a little redneck ingenuity. I got the shot.
That's right.
We'll see what we can do. Well, good. A turkey, a smoked turkey sandwich, homemade aioli. Anything fancy going in the aioli, or
you know,
is it just going to be straight up?
I like to put honey. I like a sweeter aioli. I'll have to put some honey in there. And for a while, I was making it like putting some like more spicy seasoning in there, some like cayenne and stuff. I had the spicy mix that I used. That was pretty good. But other than that, like maybe just straight down the fairway, your classic aioli. Maybe I'm just saying that because that sounds pretty good to eat right now. But that's, you know, that's my answer. A sandwich with aioli and pickled onions on a lettuce wrap.
A breast lobe dedicated to cold cuts. I like it.
That's right.
I like it. Where are you going, Jared? Explain more about this leg. You've been really beating around the edges on this recipe.
Sure.
I know that you know, keep your secrets. That's fine. That's fine. But you got to tell us a little bit more. You kept mentioning this cooking method. Like, lead us into this method.
Yeah. So it's basically a low and slow braising, right? So anything that's tough, if you braise it long enough, it's going to be fork tender and stinking delicious. So what I'll typically do, and what I'll probably do with this, these legs, is whenever I smoke something, I've tried all the different seasonings and rubs and you name it, but it always comes down to my favorite is simply salt, pepper, garlic in equal portions. So coarse salt, coarse ground pepper, and granulated garlic, not garlic powder. Everyone's got to remember that. Mm-hmm. So if you mix equal parts of those and dust it over your meat and into the smoker, I'm telling you, it's simple and it's going to be the best flavor that you've ever had. I feel like some of those other rubs that have very fine particles in them, and it just kind of almost cakes the meat a little bit, and you don't get that good smoke penetration that way. Where if you have a more coarse grind, you just get a little bit more smoke penetration. At least that's what I found, and that's what I enjoy. So I'm going to dust those things with a little bit of SPG. I'm going to probably smoke them till they're maybe 2-3 hours, and then I'm going to put them in like an aluminum pan with maybe this time I'll last time I did a darker beer with my venison shoulder. I did a darker beer. This one I might do a little lighter one just for a little bit of moisture, and you get a little bit of
that's Coors heavy versus Coors light, right? That's what you're talking, light and dark beer.
No, I actually, believe it or not, for the deer shoulder, I actually dumped the KBS in.
Whoa.
Yeah,
dropping a KBS onto that. Yep. That's an expensive. Yeah,
it was, but I like cooking though. I like dropping in a few chipotle peppers in there just to give it that little subtle smoky taste, and just a little bit of heat. And I figured that like a dark beer would kind of just go well with that flavor. So that's the profile I went with. But this time around, it was almost too much for that shoulder. Like the dark beer showed through just a little bit too much. So I'm going to scale it back a little bit. And then, you fill it up with a little beer. So you get the humidity going and you just cover it for another 2-3 hours until the meat's just falling off the bone. And it's a Southwest dish. You can call it a barbacoa or a carnitas or anything like that. But that as soon as the meat's cooked, it's so versatile. You can use it on top of a salad. You can
You can make tacos out of it, obviously. You can say that you can put it in a stew. It's so versatile and it's so tender and juicy and flavorful. It's awesome. That's my go-to.
Good deal. Good deal. Mm-hmm. I'm jiving with what you're going. If you're dropping KBS on venison, what about this? What about this?
No.
I'm thinking seasonality. You know, you got that leg that's already in there. You got your SPG. You got your salt, pepper, garlic. Stick with the spring, summer fling that you got going on here.
A little drop Oberon.
Oberon. And then slice up some orange, because that citrus turkey method that goes together. Dude, tell me the night that you are doing that, and I'm just going to roll up the driveway. I will be there.
I was almost thinking on doing something that, not a seltzer, but something that's got lime. If I'm trying to incorporate something Southwest, I would love to incorporate some sort of something with lime. But I love the way, I like the way you're thinking though, with that Oberon.
Yeah.
Cause you could definitely pair those two. I see that.
Yeah. That citrus, you can't go wrong with a lime either. A Bud Light lime though, I don't think it has that much flair. Where I think the Oberon would definitely be a good kick. Yes, there's wheat in it, so James can't have it. So, sorry.
Man.
That's just going to be one of those things you got to watch us eat.
Yeah. Don't mind me. I'm just watching you chew.
All right. Well, hey, that was the easy. That was the softball pitch. Now we've got the high heat. And this one, I got some mail in here from all the haters, James, all the people that on your social media, when you shot that bear, man, they wag the finger at you and they're mad. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're going to stick you with an arrow. You are done. You are done tomorrow.
There were some of those. There were some people not thrilled about that.
I happened as I was getting ready for this episode, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to go through the Boga thing and, you know, just kind of see some of these highlights. And you know what? That whole don't read the comments thing, you know, I was like, well, it's not my page. I'm going to go read through these comments. And yeah, man, they were throwing some shade your way. I apologize for them.
Well, there was one that was like, oh, your arrow wasn't tuned. And like, you know what? Like, I have dogs like howling all around me, like 8 people watching me, and I'm shooting a bear out of a tree. Like, yeah, you know what? Like, it didn't come out of the air, the bow clean. The arrow was admittedly of like a finicky tune. So just get that out of the way, because I did read the comments too. But yeah, that or people were pretty upset just about shooting a bear and showing it. Like, because I showed the arrow, like going in, we kind of talked about it going into it. But yeah, so you're saying, say they found me, they're going to string me up and I'm picking my last meal. Is that where you're going with this?
They've given you at least your last human right of your last meal.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick it back to him. My last meal is eating the bear. I'm dying for it. I might as well eat the thing. So I'm going to say, I'm in my garage right now. I took the front shoulder and I hung it for like a couple weeks and it was perfect temperature out for it. And then I did the bear bacoa recipe that Jared's saying, really simple, you know, a little south of the border flavor to it. And man, that was fall off the bone. Fantastic. Like kind of like waxy a little bit in your mouth, but like in a good way, not like sometimes venison can kind of like coat your mouth. And it was delicious. It was good. I brought it to a family party, like an extended family party, and it went so fast. That would be my last meal. And again, half of it because it's delicious, half because I got to stick it to the people that are killing me for for shooting a bear.
Well, hey, I liked it. What are you siding that with? You going with some mashed potatoes on that? If we're going to go, you know, total comfort food on this, you going mashed potatoes? You doing just a green? What are you doing?
Well, I'm dying anyway, so I'm going to have some gluten. And I'm doing tacos, man. I'm doing little flour tortillas, spreading it on with some cream cheese. I'll probably get some fresh salsa on there, you know, and take it south of the border. Who does not like food from that area of the world? I don't know anybody. And I feel like that's a great last meal, and I'll fart my way to the electric chair or however they decide to put me down.
Good call. I'm a big fan of the, you know what, if I'm getting killed for it, I might as well finish it off. I like it.
That's right.
I like it. Jared, sorry, you're an accomplice. They're stringing you up too.
Oh, man.
What is your last meal that you're going to have this evening?
I told you before we started recording, I
know you're torn, but you get one more.
Yeah, dude, just pick, man. You're going to die.
I'm sticking with my guns, and I am going with a Chicago-style deep dish pizza.
I thought this was wild game. Had to be wild game focus, or is it just anything?
Is it?
It is, but we're going to get you. We're going to talk about this because at the same time, you're buying your time here. You know, if they're going to string you up for putting an animal down, like now they have to put this pizza together. So in this pizza, are you going a pepperoni? Are you going a sausage? Lay out to me what this deep dish is going to look like. Are we going venison burger that's going to be into sausage? Is that where we're going to go with this?
Yeah, let's do that. I like that approach. you know what? We're going to make some bear sausage, actually. Ooh. For the bear. We're going to have some. Actually, no. Let me rephrase that. We're going to have some bear ham.
Ooh.
Yep. We're going to have some chunks of bear ham. We're going to have some venison sausage. And then we're going to have some sort of, if it's doable, a turkey pepperoni.
Wow. Just throwing everything in the kitchen sink.
Yep. And then, of course, pizza. I've got to have my veggies on there. I got to have onion, green pepper.
And about an inch of cheese. You need like an inch layer of cheese on there. Oh, or are you a thin boy? Thin cheese. What's your...
More the merrier, man.
Oh, yeah.
Some mozz. Provolone.
I love it.
Yes, sir.
You're thinking like Chicago pizza and oven grinder style, like that thick deep.
It almost looks like an upside down mushroom cap.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like lasagna, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Like thick wall crust, like some you almost got to eat with a fork. Yeah, dude, just give it to me. Give it to me dirty.
All right, ad-libbing. I'm in the cell next to you for some odd reason, and I throw out some ideas. So I went to a dinner that Hank Shaw was putting on when he did his Upland Bird and Turkey book. And so he's there just talking and doing his thing, but then the chefs in the back of this restaurant, they're basically flipping through his book, and they've sourced a lot of this stuff out so that they present basically these dishes that he's talking about. And the dessert piece actually came out, and you were talking, you really like that Southwest bit. They had this like chocolate mousse, this dark chocolate mousse, but then they had a piece of, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on it, what it's called, but they usually make it out of pork. But anyway, they took the turkey skin and they laid that out on a hot skillet. And they took another one and sandwiched it between, and they basically rendered out the turkey fat, and then it seared the skin itself, and it turned it into this chip. And they hit it with every bit of hot spice that they could on. I think there was probably chipotle, there was cayenne, because it had the spice in it, but the mix of that.
Like a crackling.
Yeah, cracklin. That's what I'm trying to
crackling.
Think of.
Crackling. That's
so they basically made turkey cracklin, but to take that skin off a wild turkey and just make that into cracklin with whatever little, you might have to splash the bear fat in there and then sandwich it in, but to make that cracklin and just crumble that over the top of this pizza we're talking about.
Ooh. Can I use that as chips in my bear last meal? I could use that as like a chip substitute, you know what I mean? Like dip that.
No, dude, you're already having gluten. Might as well go after.
Yeah, that's true. I'll just get a regular chip then.
You kidding me? No, yeah, you know what? That's just like the same thing. Like we were up north turkey hunting, and James got a bag of what were they? Plantain chips.
Oh yeah, pretty good.
And we're like, dude, this is like way healthier than the potato chip. And then we look. Nope. We looked at the nutritional facts, exactly the same.
Just a different, just rather than a potato, it was
it's a plantain.
Some non-sweet banana. Yep, exactly.
when you fry something, it's out the window. Don't even look at the package.
That's right.
Well, gentlemen, this has been an awesome hour, man. Thank you so much for coming on. James, where can my listeners find out more about Boga Hunting and where you guys are located on the internet? Whether you got Instagram,
I can't believe you'd ask me this. Like, you don't know the struggles that I've had with this very question. We'll do videos. We'll be at the end of the podcast, and Jared will be like, "Dude, you got to plug us." And I'm like, "All right, what do I say again? Let's listen to us on a pod." So here, let me give you. I've practiced this a few times.
Oh, good.
For anybody that wants to follow along, look us up on Instagram, Boga Hunting, or download Boga Hunting podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, or go to YouTube. And check out some videos. We're starting to make more videos. Jared's editing one right now. You'll get to see Jared's first masterpiece. His Mona Lisa is coming out in a matter of, I don't know how many days, weeks?
A couple days.
So,
it's not the turkey hunt because you didn't have batteries for that.
It is everything but the camera.
Oh, good, good.
Well, when you're not shooting turkeys, you don't have any reason to turn it on, you know?
Yeah.
Well, awesome. So anyway, we'll check that out. Instagram, you said, what was the YouTube was the last one. So Instagram.
Boga Hunting.
Boga Hunting. Just look him up. Awesome.
Yep. And any of the recipes we mentioned are on the website. For sure. Yes.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, hey, go ahead and stick on the line here for just a second. I'm going to send the listeners on out. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this hour as much as I've had. Man, this has just been fun to be able to just go back and forth, drinking a few beers, and talking about passions that we have. Just being in the outdoors, pursuing animals, but at the same time having a full-on experience. Basically just immersing ourselves into the way that we take animals, the people that we are with at that point, and at the same time the stories that we have when we are able to bring those animals back into the home, where then we're able to turn that into amazing meals. So folks, no matter your means of take, make sure it's something that you're practiced with. Make sure you're continuing to enjoy the way you take things. As you're out there with your bow or with your gun, make sure you got someone next to you that you're able to have a good time with. But whatever you're doing, always keep your knives sharp.